And we welcome author and co-host of Front Porch Parenting with Dr. Mary Mann Simon. Mary, good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Paul. It sounds like spring is already in St. Louis with temperatures near 80 today.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful. Yes, indeed. I've been out playing.
You mean biking?
Yeah, a little bit of everything, yeah. And the Bradford pear trees on my block are just about ready to blossom.
Wow, that's
it's
great.
It's going to be pretty. How's your family?
Good, good. And we might have a couple little grandsons tuning in as I'm on the air this morning in the St. Louis area.
Now, are your grandsons going to need new car seats? What's the deal?
Oh, Paul, this is huge news for parents today. Early this morning, the news release was at 4:02 a.m. The American Academy of Pediatrics released new car seat guidelines, and the blogosphere is going to be so hot today.
And what's the issue? Why?
Oh, I'll tell you. They recommended, at least, kids stay in car seats until at least the age of 8, maybe up to age 12.
Wow.
I mean, this is not real-time parenting. Can you imagine what's going to happen if people really follow these recommendations?
I wouldn't like that if I was a 10-year-old.
Well, we would have one child who would have been in junior high before she would have been out of a car seat. And I am the most cautious person. Actually, our 4-year-old grandson, Josh, says, "Why is Grandma so cautious?" I really care about safety. I mean, emotional and physical safety is so important to me. It is my priority. But I think recommendations like we have today are just unrealistic. It's not real-time parenting. For example, toddlers should stay in rear-facing car seats until they're 2 years old. Well, you know, that's kind of understandable. But the reason that parents are so eager to get car seats, you know, the kids can turn around about the age of one, is that they can use the mirror to actually see their child's face and to see how they're doing in the back seat. And also for a child, in terms of being happy in the back seat,
yeah,
when everything is going backwards. I mean, if you've ever ridden in a backwards train, you know that it's frustrating. Stuff is gone before you've seen it.
Have you ever flown Southwest when they have the seats turned around the other direction?
I haven't.
Inside the cabin?
No.
I don't know if they do that anymore, but I've done that, and it's really bizarre.
Yeah. Well, but that's what kids are going to be dealing with. And then the other recommendation that is so huge is that they're suggesting that until kids are 4 feet 9 inches tall, and that's between 8 and 12 years of age, what is going to happen to all the soccer carpools that get kids from one place to another? I mean, literally, we cannot be dragging 8 and 10-year-old kids with these car seats as we flip them in and out for their activities. I just, you know, I'm really a supporter of the American Academy of Pediatrics and their recommendations, but I really hope that there's a mom or dad engineer out there who's listening today who will take these recommendations and say, okay, how can we make car seats safer, or car travel safer, maybe make the whole car safer for everybody so we don't need to deal with this kind of stuff.
Now, will some parents have to go out and buy new child car seats because of these recommendations?
If they follow the recommendations, absolutely, because many of the kids have already graduated from car seats and are in boosters. So, I mean, this is huge news on the parent front today.
And I think I heard this from you. Don't these car seats have to be replaced every once in a while, even if they haven't been involved in anything, like an accident or dropped?
Absolutely. Even if your car seat has not had any accidents, you know, hasn't had any problems, there is wear and tear on the belts. If you clean your belts, you know, that strap the kids, that harness the kids in, there's wear and tear in those. If you look underneath and turn your car seat over, you will see an expiration date, actually, on your car seat. It's something that isn't really advertised a lot, but there is an expiration date. And that's simply because of the wear and tear on the harness, the belt-type things that are holding the kids in.
You know, we've got our first grandchild on the way this summer, and Jeannie got a used car seat from somebody at work for free, And it was hard to pass up something free, but you're telling me I probably shouldn't use that.
Oh, no. Yeah, please don't. I'll tell you, I'm a great believer in garage sales, and I just delight in Saturday mornings and in the St. Louis area Wednesday mornings once spring rolls around. But car seats and cribs, those are a couple of the things that you just cannot risk buying used. You can't pick them up at Goodwill. The regulations have changed so much. You just don't know exactly if that was on a recall list. It's really high risk. So I would encourage people, please don't have used car seats or cribs that they just pick up at a garage sale. I know free sounds great, but safe is better.
Well, I'll tell her as soon as I get home today. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has some of this information posted on their website. I understand from looking at this site that every state has different laws concerning these restraints.
Yeah, and that's what's so tricky, especially as we look at summer travel, because parents are going to be going to different states, different areas. What is the regulation in the state that you're going to? That's why at the airports I see so many parents dragging car seats, and it really pays to buy a really nice car seat cover. They cost $30 or $40. But just to be sure that, you know, the car seat doesn't get all banged up and filthy as it's flying around with you.
Mm. Says here that all children under 13 should ride in the back seat.
Yes. That's another one that comes out in the new regulations this morning. So I know that these steps, you know, hopefully will protect children in car crashes and save lives. But I think we need to look realistically at how recommendations like this fit into everyday parenting. Because otherwise what happens is people say, oh, I can't do that, throw up their hands, and then don't keep their kids safe at all. So we just don't want that to happen.
I can remember coming back from a family vacation with my mom and dad and little brother. Mom and the little brother were in the back seat, and I was sitting in the front seat next to Dad. No seat belts in that old Nash Rambler. We didn't have seat belts back then. And here I am riding in the front seat, and I'm like 6 years old.
Yeah. That wouldn't happen today, at least according to the AAP.
And you could get ticketed for that, huh?
It depends where you are. It really does. And so that's why when you travel this summer, check the websites of the states that you're going to be visiting. You know, and use common sense. We want our kids to be safe. We want them to be as safe as possible. But we also need to be realistic in terms of what we can do in enforcing these kinds of recommendations.
What do you recommend for just carrying a child while you're walking? You know, I see these papoose things, front and back. And do you have any recommendations on those things?
Well, there's so many different kinds, and it's a wonderful safety kind of thing for the child to feel all swaddled in there, whether it's a snuggly or a backpack style. It's a great convenience for parents, and it's wonderful for kids as long as you follow the guidelines that are recommended for the weight of the baby. After a while, you'll feel it on your back if you're carrying a child that is too heavy. But it's a wonderful kind of convenience. We always want to do what we can to let those infants and those toddlers look out and see the world. And as long as we are interacting with them, telling them what we're seeing, what we're having a real problem now is with the text walking that parents are doing. You know, they're texting instead of talking to their child. We really have to remember that young children are in a language envelope, and that time that we have, whether they're in a snuggly or Eddie Bauer backpack, whatever it is, that's bonding time with our kids, not with our text mail.
Mm. Have you learned anything from your daughters, especially the one here in St. Louis who has a couple of little guys? Even though you're an expert, are there new things that you've learned from her?
You know, there are things that I've been reminded of. You know, that wonderful richness of these early years. It is such a precious time. And our Nate and our Josh, 2 and 4, they are just so involved in the world, and for the privilege to be with them and involved too. I mean, I fly halfway across the country about every 6 weeks just to have that privilege, and it's worth every penny of airline cost and time to do that. So I think what I've taken away from Christy is how much she truly enjoys her parenting. She realizes what a blessing it is to have two little guys who have the world in front of them, and she is truly enjoying her parenting. I had three kids in 3 years, and I don't know that I enjoyed it to that extent. Being a mom was always my favorite thing, but I have to tell you, being a grandma is even better.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Just wait, Paul. You don't have long.
My turn's coming. One of the topics we talked about this morning with biblical counselor Dr. Jack Fiennes was news overload, and adults are talking about it. You know, there's so many bad things going on. It seems like all at once there's no relief in sight. When it comes to our children, how should we explain, for instance, an earthquake and a tsunami and nuclear meltdown to them? Do they ask questions, those youngsters? Do they say, is that going to happen to me here?
And that's really the question they do ask, Paul. That's why we always, whatever it is that we're talking about, whether it's the tornado warning going off and having to go to the basement, or whether it's a tsunami or earthquake, whatever, the child personalizes that information, and they want to know, is this going to happen to me? So the underlying point is to be honest and concentrate on making them feel safe. Tell them all the things you are doing to keep them safe. If you go down to the basement during a tornado, you know, warning, and I know the sirens have been blaring in St. Louis at times this spring already.
Yeah.
Tell them all the things that you're doing. We're going down to the basement. We're staying away from the windows. And we'll bring the pet down with us, and we'll all be safe. And we're doing the very best we can to take care of us. So assuring and reassuring your child what you are doing. And always starting with their questions. You know, if they aren't asking questions, then pose one. Say, have you heard the kids at school talking about this radiation thing? Find out where they are, and then that's how you know on what level to answer their question.
And then how much news should a child watch compared to the parents?
Very little, if any, and it needs to be selective. I think that's one of the big things that we're seeing today with so many screens in the house. Especially with the screens that are so close to children's faces. When they have an iPad or iPhone on and they're getting those images of the radiation, of the tsunami, of the earthquake, whatever it is, those images are only 8 inches away from a child's face. Because of that, that seems to have, at least research is showing, that seems to have more impact on a child. Because it is so close, it is so immediate to them physically. So we have to be very sure that our filters are in place, not just on all the screens in our home, but we are doing the filtering. You know, the child's best filter for news and information is in his head, and we provide that. We're the ones who set those standards. We can help, you know, we can have that backstop of the software that we put in those machines, but we really have to make sure our child has that portable filter that he carries in his head.
And finally here this morning, I ran across an article, and I thought about you when I read this. Kim Painter wrote this. Kim has written about health and wellness for USA Today since about 1987, and she's the mother of two teen boys. And she writes, honestly, if you have a teenager, you have a liar in the house. That is, you are living with a human being. We all lie, but even savvy parents may blanch at the news that 80% of high school students in a new survey admitted to lying to their parents about something significant in the past year. The finding is in line with past reports and is not the most surprising thing in the survey. After all, 59% of the 43,000 teens surveyed by the Josephson Institute of Ethics said they'd cheated on a test, and 27% said they'd stolen from a store. But it is a reminder that parenting teens sometimes requires separating fact from fiction and harmless fibs from dangerous deceptions. And then she's got some bullet points here. You want to weigh in on it right now?
Sure.
What she's saying so far?
Yeah, one of the things that we know is that on any list of virtues that parents want to communicate to their children, and any of those character values they want their kids to take into adulthood with them, honesty or truthfulness is always number one or number two. So it really is an important value for parents. However, if you look at the research and that says, how often do you lie to your child? It's very often. And the statistics are very high. So first of all, what kids are seeing is the modeling we're doing. And we think, well, maybe a little fudging here, you know, telling a child, well, I can't do this right now because I have to do this, which isn't really true, doesn't really matter. But kids see through the dishonesty. And if we are modeling dishonest behavior or words or actions to our kids, they're going to see right through it. They learn to read emotions and behaviors before they learn to read books. And we have to remember that. So first of all, we have to be sure that what we're modeling is true. And second, the thing is, we're having all this dishonesty all over the place. Last week, the big news here in the D.C. area was that a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer for the Washington Post, which is our morning newspaper I picked up this morning at the door, was accused of plagiarizing, and she's going to be on leave from the Washington Post for the next 3 months. I read her column regularly, every week. And yet this lying, this dishonesty, this lack of truthfulness has crept into our society in part because of all the misinformation and misinterpretation that we have through the Internet.
Says here that knowing why teens lie, why they lie, will help you get to the truth. Some kids lie about bad grades, while others lie about drunken parties or dangerous driving, but the underlying reason is often the same. The biggest reason teens lie is that they don't want to disappoint their parents. Yeah. They really care what you think.
Yeah, and they do. But if we have, and of course no parent is perfect, I'm not a perfect mom, I haven't met any perfect parents yet here, but you know, what we have to be sure of is that we are communicating in a sense of trust, that we have that trust relationship, that we are an askable parent, that our child can talk to us about anything and know that we will still love them. I mean, that we have to communicate time and time again. And we do that in how we receive the news they give us. It might always not be what we want to hear, but we really need to start by listening.
It says here that, among other reasons, teens lie to protect their friends, to do things you would forbid, to avoid consequences, and to keep their confidences.
Yeah, some of the same reasons that we tend to lie in our interactions with other adults.
This article suggests what you said just a while ago, model honesty. Don't lie in front of teenagers to them or on their behalf.
Absolutely. Our kids knew that they could pull over a lot of things on me, but what was really important was that they were truthful, that I would really, really get angry if they lied.
Dr. Mary Mann Simon, host of Front Porch Parenting, thank you for being with us today.
And have a great 80-degree day.
All right, Mary.